Welcome to the Daily Path Podcast, where it's all about building an authentic life and business. I'm your host, Joe Winters Jr., and now for today's message. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Daily Path Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Winters Jr., and on today's podcast episode, I'm joined by Chris N. West for the second time here on the podcast. He is the founder of LR Training Solutions, where they provide business training for corporate teams. Chris is also an award-winning speaker and the author of two books. He has worked with organizations like Charles Schwab, Google, Canon, Mercedes-Benz, and more. Chris, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. So today I would like to talk to you about what you do at LR Training Solutions, your process for acquiring clients and how businesses can grow online. So before we jump into what you do at LR Training Solutions, let's start off with, you know, life updates. Since the last time you were here, you've had a son. Congratulations on your newborn. How's being a father and doing fatherhood while in entrepreneurship?
Yeah, it's interesting. So I feel like it is definitely puts some more motivation to the passion, right? So it helps me like move forward a little bit, knowing that, well, I have a son now, you know, so I definitely have to take care of him and also set a good example. So that's been helpful. And of course, my schedule has changed a little bit when it comes to being without a son. And now being a son is kind of like time management as well. Because now I know that sometimes I have to pick him up from daycare, and I have to balance work, have to balance managing teams and everything like that. So it's a different experience, but it's definitely motivating.
I can, you know, only imagine. So since you've had a son and you've now had to kind of switch up your schedule, focus more on time management, you know, what have you found to work when it comes to, you know, just scheduling to be able to be present and take care of your son and pick him up from school and doing the things you have to do with your son, as well as still getting the things done you need to get done in business?
Oh, yeah. So I think it comes down to just dedicating the time. So I think family is important. And so maybe we go for a walk after about six. My wife gets home from work and spend the weekends. And I just realized that I'm probably spending a little bit more time on my business before, because, of course, I'm more productive. I start the day a little bit earlier. So I know that, well, instead of me working later in the day, I'm just going to work earlier, you know? So, and then it's easy because what I saw, it's less distractions the earlier you start the day. So I'm getting a lot more done in the morning, early in the morning, and then in the afternoon versus before I had a kid, before I had like the larger contracts, I wouldn't say slack, but I would say I was working in the evenings when I could have just been working a little bit earlier. So that's one of the major changes. And I always understood that. I always realized that, well, the earlier the better, because less distractions, as well as just getting things done. And then business is open in different countries early sometimes. Right. I remember sometimes I would wake up and I'll get an email, and the email came through at like 5 a.m. And I'm like, it'll be something like Serbia. And I'm like, oh man, so if I was up a little bit earlier, you know, I could have probably took advantage of some of those international opportunities faster. And of course, sometimes I get the deal, sometimes I don't, but I feel like speed is a factor in business. If one person responds in 10 minutes versus another person responds in 8 hours, it makes a huge difference. So, but yeah, scheduling is different.
It certainly does make a huge difference. So at your company, LR Training Solutions, you provide team training on various business growth strategies, including team collaboration and digital marketing strategies. In the work that you do with your clients, how would you say team collaboration today looks post-COVID versus how team collaboration may have looked pre-COVID?
Oh, so team collaboration is a lot different. So, for example, before COVID, I mean, everybody saw each other. I mean, most people saw each other. They went to go to work Monday through Friday. They have in-person meetings, and everybody had that connection. They can understand the culture. But now, post-COVID, there's so many companies that are choosing to either go fully remote or do a hybrid approach when it comes to just being present at a company. So that is the challenge, right? So you have people that are working remote. They may have never saw their current coworkers in person. They may have never saw The Office, and they have that challenge of being able to connect with their team members. And for example, one thing that people overlook is if you were working in person and then all of a sudden you went to the remote environment, you still have the culture, you know the culture, you know people there, you still have relationships. But what about the people that just got the job in the remote environment? They've never had that experience.
Right.
So these people, they might not feel as comfortable reaching out to colleagues and collaborating. So that's the major difference that I've found, hybrid, remote versus in-person.
Okay. So for those that are going fully remote, it sounds like, you know, integrating more of the hybrid model would be beneficial. So that way, you know, those that don't understand the team culture for whatever reason, whether they're new to the organization or whatever the other alternatives would be, from what you're saying, it seems as if, you know, a in-person or hybrid would be better for team culture than a fully remote arrangement. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's what I'm seeing. Essentially, because some of my clients, government agencies, they went from fully remote to hybrid. Many were upset, but now that they're doing it, they realize how impactful that in-person communication is. Mm-hmm. I mean, before, they'll hop on a Teams call, a Zoom call, and nobody would have their cameras on. Right. So no connection. But now at least they're able to see each other a couple of days a week. That makes all the difference.
Right. Definitely. So I'm sure there's different, you know, there's not a one size fit all, but what would you say would be a ideal mix if someone was going to take that hybrid approach? Like how much should, you know, team meetings be online versus in person? If you had to kind of do like a weekly basis type deal, what would you say?
Yeah, I would say you can do your weekly meetings virtual, but I would encourage having one day at least a month where everybody meets in person. So instead of having everything online, just choose one day. Maybe it's the last Monday of the month, last Friday of the month where everybody meets up. In that case, you can at least have that collaboration. You can at least get to talk to people in person, see how everybody's doing. And then also, even when you do on these virtual calls, I would encourage camera use. I mean, because think about how much we get from body language, how we can see if somebody understands what we're saying. If the cameras are always off, we lose that. So I would recommend cameras on and also one day a month at least where people can connect.
Now, with this one day of month where people can connect, what would you say is the ideal duration? Is that like 30 minutes to an hour, 1 hour to 3 hours? What are you thinking?
Well, some companies are doing the whole day. So it's kind of pretty much, it's not a meeting. Just in general, it's everybody's in that same building that for a full day. And of course, that includes a couple meetings. So at least having that. And I mean, even before the pandemic, the companies that were doing remote, many of them, including the companies I worked at that I was remote before I started my business, we did more of like every 3 months, we would go to a regional office. Every month, we'll go to a regional office. A couple times a year, we'll go to the headquarters. So that kind of keep things going as far as culture. But now it's a little bit different now that during the pandemic, you couldn't have any of that.
Right.
But so that's why I recommend like the one day a month type of thing, at least minimum.
Absolutely. Now for the entrepreneur with the small team and they're thinking about taking the hybrid approach. And the reason why I'm, you know, asking questions more so about the hybrid approach, because I do think that it's like the present and the way with the future. I think, you know, being fully in person can be a bit much now that we've seen that obviously we can get work done remotely, but at the same time for team culture sakes, yes, we still need to be able to interact with our coworkers and colleagues in person. So, but the thing that I would like to ask here is for the entrepreneur that has the small team and so they're doing their weekly meetings online, they're doing, you know, once a month in person, kind of like a full day arrangement, what would you say is important for that owner or that CEO to prioritize on that day in person? And then in addition to that, what tips would you have for that you know, founder, entrepreneur, the CEO that is looking to build better relationships with them as the individual and the people on their team.
Yeah, definitely. I would encourage the priority just being to socializing, honestly, because if we think about the virtual environment, the meetings we have, the challenge is it's usually strictly about business. You know, so in-person meetings, we get to see how people are doing, connect with them, socialize a little bit, more relaxed environment. But virtual, strictly about business, from the time you get on the call to the time you end the call. So I would encourage just getting together and just having a good time as far as like socializing. I know some companies, they used to have like a potluck where everybody brings food and just activity. So that's what you want to think about: team building activities, socializing, and then as well as the business. And then for the team member that's trying to build that connection, I would, the manager, I would say during that day where they're at the office, have those one-on-ones. Along with having those one-on-ones and check-ins virtually, you want to put yourself in a position where they know that you're accessible. Because when it comes to remote environment, when I was on a team like that, I always felt isolated. I felt disconnected from the company, even though they're reaching out maybe once a week. We would talk on the phone sometimes or have a monthly all-hands meeting. It would still feel disconnected. So I would encourage letting people know that, yes, you are available. They can reach out at any time.
Right.
And that'll kind of help that relationship build.
Certainly makes sense. So last year, you acquired your first Fortune 500 client. What are one, congratulations on acquiring your first Fortune 500 client, and I'm sure many since then. What are one or two business lessons you've learned in your journey to signing Fortune 500 clients that startup entrepreneurs should know?
One thing I learned is that your product and service may be needed at all levels. When starting out as a small business owner, I would think, well, my product or service, maybe it's only good for another small business owner or people in my local area, my city, other like mom and pop shops, things like that. So eventually I realized that, well, the service I'm providing, the training services, helping small business out, that can still be translated to the Fortune 500 companies. That can still be translated to government agencies. It can be to a larger scale. So a good example is how, when it comes to government contractor, for example, the government pretty much buys everything. So if you have a small cookie shop and you build that business up and you have a good amount of client, you have a good reputation, guess what? Big companies, government, they probably need catering. And so it's just that mindset of that what you have can be used at all levels. But at the same time, you do have to have the quality. You have to have the quality. You have to have the experience as well. Because these larger companies, the government agencies, they're not just going to go with anybody that just started off like yesterday. You know, they want to see that you've done it before, right?
Right.
And so, yeah, having that mindset of you can offer that to many levels, and also making sure that your content connects with them. Right. So, for example, if I have a small business, and when you go to my website, you see that I only work with small businesses, I only work with this type of people. When that Fortune 500 comes, or those larger companies, agencies, government agencies come by your site, they might think, you know what, seems like a nice business, but I don't think they've serviced a company similar to mine before.
Right.
So I don't know if I want to go with them. So you always want to think about, whenever you have your website, speak directly to the audience you're trying to attract. So when they go there, they know that, hey, this business, I'm comfortable paying them this money, and we should bring this person in. We should use this person's services because I know that they're going to do a good job.
No, I completely agree with that. So let's say someone's listening right now. They're a startup entrepreneur. They would like to work with Fortune 500 companies. And so in their mind, they're thinking, I should create a website that speaks directly to them. However, let's say they don't have the experience. They haven't signed any clients yet, as you mentioned earlier. You know, how should they navigate this? Should they create a website that's speaking to the Fortune 500 company, but go out and take whatever business they can get? And so that way they can get the, you know, the work, the results, the quality, have the testimonials, or would you say that they should actually create a website that's talking directly to the type of clientele they can get right now, attract that clientele, get the work, get the results, get the testimonials, and then shift their website, their marketing and messaging to attract the Fortune 500 company? What steps and in what order would you recommend one take?
Yeah, so there's a lot of ways to look at that question. So I can tell you the answer based off my story. So when I was at Google, we worked with small businesses, and also every now and then we would work with like a Bank of America, and we'll show them how to use like video tools that Google offers, such as Hangouts.
Okay.
And I always realized that you do have to choose a target when it comes to business initially. So I always thought to myself, let me try out working with so many different types of organizations, so many different types of businesses, and let me see what type of companies do I like working with, and two, that have the money to pay for the services. Mm-hmm. So I would always encourage, try out different things. If you're just starting out, work with so many different types of audience, so you can figure out what is the best audience that you can work with, that you enjoy working with, mm-hmm. and also they can help your business grow as well. Mm-hmm. Because you want to be careful with automatically saying that, well, this is the audience that I serve, if you haven't done the research, if you haven't done the experience as well.
Right.
So part of my entrepreneurship journey came from my work experience. Mm-hmm. So all the people that are out there right now that are thinking about starting a business or starting right now, we often underestimate our past experience, even if that's coming from working for a company. Right. So if you work for somewhere, look at the experience you had at that company and have that be some type of starting point to where you want to work with when it comes to your business. Mm. And so, yeah, I would say try out different ways. And then eventually you're going to land on what you like to do. So for my journey, I started off with small businesses. Whenever you went to my website, businesses, small businesses, and I would get testimonials, content. I'll get that good experience because I knew that if I offer a price that's affordable, I can get in the door and I can get that experience.
Right.
And then as my journey progressed, then I realized, you know, I work with a medium-sized company. Now I'm going to promote that. I work with a large company. Let me promote that. And so it turned into large companies, Fortune 500, government agencies eventually. Right. So now I'm at the point where, okay, most of the content is there. Mm. So that's what I recommend.
Mm. Thank you for sharing that. So would you say that, so you mentioned how you, when you first got started, you took from the work experience you already had. Okay, for someone that they're looking to get in the coaching and consulting space, speaking and training space, and they are looking to take experience from, you know, a previous work to get into this space, how would you advise them to extract the value that they were providing in past roles to be able to articulate that value to potential clients?
Oh, yeah. So that's one area where I feel small business struggle, because I remember when I had my experience starting it out, I would just mention everything that I would do on my resume, on my LinkedIn profile. And I would notice that other people, they wouldn't mention any. The people that have the same position that I did, they wouldn't mention any of that really great experience. Like, well, we traveled to 20 states. Mm. It'll never be mentioned. So, and some people feel like it's bragging. Some people feel like, well, if I say all this is bragging, but in reality, you have to stand out some way. So people need to know what you've done. So if you've worked with companies, whenever you start promoting yourself, promoting your company on your website, say, I have experience working with these type of companies. Right. That's not necessarily saying that that's your client. That's right. Saying that you have the experience working with marketing managers. You have experience right. working with executives.
Right. Right.
Yeah, so, yeah.
So once you're speaking to, you know, the, and I guess really I'm trying to hit on a point here for someone that's, you know, they have not received a speaking, coaching, consulting, or training client. They're looking to get their very first one, but it's okay. Like, I have no idea how to explain that although I did XYZ at previous employer, how this would actually add value to you. And as a result, you should pay me a fee to do so. So how would you advise that?
Yeah. So you would just talk about, like, go into detail about the experience you've had. So there's different types of roles you can work at a company. So maybe you want to do exactly what the company you worked for did, or you just want to kind of do like a portion of what they did for you, for your business. Mm-hmm. So write down all the experience you've had, the type of companies you work with. I know it's sometimes not good to use the actual client name, so you want to avoid that. But I would say the position. So if you're a coach, if you want to be a coach or a consultant, I would say, what results did you get for some of these brands? So you increased revenue, or maybe you helped someone stop struggling with any issue they've had in life, right? So write down those results you got and then go from there. And not only that, but you want to consider, if you don't have any experience at all, you can always create your experience. Like, go to a local establishment. You say stuff you want to, maybe you want to do it for free, or people that you know. I'm talking about coaches. If you want, like, be a coach, like talk to people that you know, maybe your past employers, past coworkers. Try to do stuff at no cost, just so you can get that experience.
Right.
So yeah, just so you can get that experience, so you can say that you've done it before. Because what I have noticed, a lesson that I have learned, is that when it comes to charging that dollar amount, the higher dollar amount, they want to see that you've done it before. Right. So it's going to be hard for somebody to hand you thousands of dollars for a service if you haven't done it before. Mm. So you need to just do it and chronicle and then document what you've done.
Mm, absolutely. What would you say are common misconceptions about digital marketing that hold entrepreneurs back from getting results in their business?
I would say the misconception is that you would just post and then all of a sudden you sell out a product, right? So that's a misconnection that one post would do it all. You know, it's like there's no magic bullet to this stuff, right? So so many people, they want to accomplish everything, and they just want to have one accomplishment and then their business is a success. In reality, it's a lot of small strategies, small tactics that help. So I think the major thing that slows business down is they maybe do one tactic and they get discouraged. They say, well, it's not working out for me. I do this, I'm not getting those impressions.
Right.
I mean, if you reach 20 people, that's still 20 people that can purchase your service.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I didn't mean to cut you off here, but what I was going to ask in addition to that is, what should they be thinking or doing instead? So instead of getting discouraged because they're not getting the reach, like, what should they be thinking and doing instead? Because it is a mental thing, as you mentioned.
Yeah, I would say first think about the audience, think about who you're trying to reach, and don't worry about the numbers too much, but try to build the specific audience. So for example, what I tell some businesses is you have the Walmart where they get millions of visitors a month, and then all these visitors, they probably pay, I don't know, $20, $10, $50, $100.
Right.
But then you have the smaller websites. Maybe an old example is they're selling large printers. Mm. Yeah, they get 20 visitors a month to the website. But guess what? If two of those people purchase, they sell those for $20,000, right? So that's the kind of thing I think about when it comes to views and traffic, is you got to know who your audience is.
Right.
And if your audience is those people that are willing to pay $20,000 for a printer, you don't need to be worrying about getting a million visitors to your site or a million visitors to your social media.
Mm, you know, completely agree with you here. One thing that I say, you know, quite often is, you know, you have to know your audience and you have to know your numbers, because, you know, at the end of the day, especially if you're in the business of high ticket like I am, you know, you don't need hundreds of clients every single year to make an extremely decent living for yourself, right? You only need a handful of clients. And so now, obviously, the lower the ticket, the more clients you need. Completely understand and get that. But I do think that it's very important to really know your audience and know your numbers, because you want to be able to go at things in a way that is sustainable and that is in alignment with who you are. And in terms of, you know, social media, man, one of the things that I've seen often is that people go to, it's almost like there's this thing amongst new digital entrepreneurs that the success of an online business also equates fame. And it's like, you know, you don't have to be famous to be successful. Like, you can generate $100,000, $1 million, $10 million online and not be famous. And so, you know, I can't, you know, stress the importance of knowing your audience and knowing your numbers enough and not getting discouraged because you're not going viral on social media. So for those who don't follow you, Chris, in my audience, I definitely think that, you know, they should. You're doing some amazing things and it's clear you're crushing it. I would like to speak with you about how you are currently getting clients for your business and how has it changed since when you first got started. So what was, you know, what was it like to get your very first client versus how you get clients now?
Yes, I think that's a great question. It's always good to understand that. So first client was through email marketing. So I decided to start a business and I was like, you know what, let me go and ask people if they want to be on my newsletter, people that I already knew.
Right.
And send an email about some marketing tips. And then one of those people ended up being a board member of an association that I was part of. And they said, hey, I didn't know you do this. Let's connect, send me a proposal. And that was my first client. And then also another way I got business was subcontracting. So, you know, there's always bigger companies that are offering services. And then I just applied to be one of the trainers, you know, just apply to be a part of their business. And then they would send me some of their business. So subcontracting was a good way just to get the experience. But eventually I wanted to go direct. I wanted to go direct to consumer, direct to the client, because I feel like, one, there's more revenue in that. And then two, you have more ability to work with the client as far as what their needs are. And so during this time, I was posting on social media, working on my website as far as search optimization, going out there, pitching, doing proposals. And eventually my brand got to the point where I had more credibility because I've been posting so much about the results I'm getting, the things I've been doing, the customers I've gotten. And now I started getting revenue from social media because they say, okay, hey, this person's been doing this. I'm seeing him post them multiple times a week. Right. This is what he does full time. And then that led to business because I gained the trust of people that are following. So that's one source that I get right now. And two is right now is a search engine automation. So again, I've been working on my website, adding blogs, adding content to my website. And now when people search, then they find my business. That's one way. That's another way. And then three is just going out there and still trying to apply and go directly to the larger organizations, like a government agency contract, submitting those bids. So that's that's probably like the three ways outside of that networking and then referral business. But yeah, so it has changed. I never really thought of it that way, but it has changed since I started.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing. I would like to unpack some of this, starting with the very few first clients. So for the entrepreneurs in the audience, you're looking to get your first few clients. I think it's worth, you know, obviously taking all of this and using all this stuff, but especially these tips about how to get clients when you're first starting out, because I know as an entrepreneur first starting out, it can be tough to get clients. So Chris, you mentioned that you were running a newsletter. You basically started this newsletter and then you went to people that you knew and asked if they would like to be on the newsletter. If they say yes, you put them on the newsletter. And as a result of them being on this newsletter, you're sending them tips about, you know, marketing, et cetera, et cetera. First question here, how many emails would you say you were sending a week through the newsletter?
I would say it was a 1 to 2. So most of the time it was just one. It was so 1 to 2 tips about what you do, what you offer, helpful tips, right? So letting your audience know or your immediate network that you're in business, that you have a new business and you would like support. So things like that. And just letting, again, just there's always a way to share some type of tips that are out there.
That makes sense. So if I'm hearing you correctly, you would compose this email newsletter and you would include some educational information that serve them as, you know, for tips and insights for their business, and then some sort of call to action in your email as well, letting them know you're in business and how they can work with you. Is that correct?
So at the end, near the end of the newsletter, they would read it and then they'll say, connect if you want to talk about services, if you need help with something like this. And then from there, you know, they would reach out. And then the challenge about newsletter is you're not going to get that immediate gratification like you do on social media. On social media, you post something, you get likes, right? So in marketing, you're gonna be sending emails, and then you might not hear from somebody for a year. And they'll say, hey, I've been looking at your newsletter every week, and I finally have the budget to pay for your services.
Right.
So just because they don't have the budget right now doesn't mean that they're not going to have the money a year later. So you want to put the content out there.
And stay on this real fast. So I agree with this. So when you say that, how important is wanting to actually make an impact in the lives of your audience and your community? How important is that for your business success and you fulfilling your mission as an online business?
Yeah. Oh, that's important, because if you have a goal of to impact people, it's going to result in just your business growing, because people are noticing that you are willing to help them. So whenever I would speak on social media, sometimes I would always use the example of like a dentist. If a dentist is sharing tips on how to have good hygiene, good dental hygiene, keep your teeth clean, eventually what's going to happen is they're going to need to go to the dentist, and they're going to find you, right? So find the dentist. So yeah, exactly. So just sharing that you're helping is what always leads to the trust. Because one thing people forget online is that you can't just start a page and start posting and expect everybody to trust you. Right. You have to like gain that trust over time, because think about how many scams are out there, right, how many people are stealing money. Right. So in order for you to really gain that credibility to start making money online, is you have to gain that trust by helping others.
Absolutely agree. So let's shift gears here before we close out to talk about what you do for personal development. The first question I have here is, what is one book that has helped you in your entrepreneurial journey?
One book. Man, so it's been a lot. So there's the
Thinking Car. You can share more than one if you like.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think about all the books. I'd have to go back. But I know there's the Think Go Rich, Rich Dad Poor Dad, all those like financial, just to get in the mind state of what it means for like entrepreneurship. So those are all good books as well. So there's specific books to the industry, like speaking, you know, like Money Talks. I know there's that's as far as like how to make money in speaking.
Okay.
How to do that. And also Presentation Masters, that's an audiobook that I listen to as far as like the skill of speaking, like communicating. Because I think that's important too. You want to read books about business, but also you want to read books about how to actually like hone in on your craft.
Right.
And Built to Sell, that's another book if you want to make a valuable business. And even if you don't want to sell your business, you just want to have a valuable business, it's a good idea, because it helps you think about the systems. And by the way, I always like to, like, I think it's a good idea to always look at what are like big companies doing, because they're a big company for a reason. Even if you don't want to have a big company, look at the kind of things that they're doing and implement it, because they're doing it for a reason, and it helps, you can help your process now.
Yeah. Right. Absolutely. The final question I would like to ask you before we get out of here today is, if there was a principle or practice that we didn't cover and you would like to share, what would it be?
Let's see. I would say just have a support system. Having a support system if you can, whether that's a mentor or whether that is a mastermind group, that people that you talk to that can be accountable. Maybe it's you meet on a monthly basis, or just having supportive family. So make sure you have support so you can go to these people, talk about your challenges, and this could be joining associations as well. Having a group of people that you can reach out to at any time about your business is key.
Absolutely. Chris, if you don't mind, please share with my listeners where they can connect with you.
Yeah, so my website, chrisinwest.com, and also Instagram, chrisinwest, and LinkedIn, Chris Cheatham West. You can find me there, and then Facebook as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will be including those links for my listeners to connect in the show notes. Chris, I want to say thank you for joining me on Daily Path Podcast again for the second time. It was a pleasure speaking with you. I'm looking forward to us continuing to collaborate and do business with one another. Thank you. And to my listeners, I hope you enjoyed today's podcast episode and you make the decision to implement something into your daily path. Until next time, have a blessed day. Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Daily Path Podcast. If you would like to launch your own podcast show to expand your reach, grow your network, and sign more premium clients for your business, visit dailypathacademy.com to learn how we can help you launch an impactful podcast that changes lives around the world and acquires high-ticket clients for your business. That's dailypathacademy.com.